as to why.
Yeah. So Henry's someone who's a part of this church, and I got to know him just from standing around having conversations after we would worship together. And I think, like, every time I would talk to him, he would ask really great questions, and he wouldn't talk about himself, and I'd try to press in on some questions. And then every time I'd ask him a question, I would learn some ridiculous thing about him that would just come in passing. Like, he wins swing dancing competitions nationally and is, like, training people in creative writing and, like, working on a book and those sorts of things. He's a guy that now I try whenever I have a conversation with him, try to block his questions toward me and direct questions to him so I can learn from him. And so I thought it'd be good to bring you guys in on that, and together we can, like, toss questions at him and learn from him. So Henry, tell us a little bit about what you do, your interest in this topic.
Sure. So I classify myself as a creative practitioner, and so I'm very interested in trying new forms of creativity. So writing, swing dancing, as you were saying, jazz music, play jazz piano, comedy improv. So all these different things I feel give a different perspective on what it means to be creative, and they all have some aspect of creativity embedded in them. And so I love to experience them and learn more about creativity overall through one specific craft.
What do you do occupationally? And just name one of the 10 things, or two or three of the 10 things.
Yeah, so for work, I'm a freelance biography writer. And then I also work as a literacy advocate. So basically working with schools, talking to principals, superintendents, helping them to get new programs into their school to help students learn how to read better.
And as a creative practitioner, the most interesting thing that I've learned in discussion with you was I first knew him as a math tutor. And these things tend to not compute and go well together. It's the math tutor who does all the other creative stuff. So you're not off the hook for any of it. You've got to be linear and creative. That's what Henry teaches us. All right, so now we know a little bit about Henry. Let's do some questions. So go ahead and text any questions in.
Get creative.
The directions are up there. I'll go ahead and start us off with a question. One of the things that I would love for you to press into a little more, Ken, is the degree to which creativity is a human trait, or if it's a personality trait. You talked about that tonight, and that it is a human trait. But would you say that there are degrees of it that are associated with personality and those sorts of things, or those are just people who are stifled?
Yeah, that's a good question. Glad you talked that. Can you guys hear me?
There we go. You're good.
The question really has to do with, you know, where are we at on the spectrum of creativity? And are we all kind of locked into a certain spot, or is it kind of just a sliding scale? I think that the interesting thing about sociologists is they talk to us about true giftedness, is that in a given room like this room tonight, 10% of the group will have any one gift. So 10% of us will be actually truly gifted as leaders. Now, you know, some leaders are born, they're just in a different category. Obviously some can grow into that. But gift of evangelism, 10% would have that. Gift of mercy, 10%. And we can kind of keep going on, right? But the artistic gift as a gifting, there's gonna be 10% in this room that were truly gifted by God to do it at an extraordinary level. And I think, why is that? Well, to edify the body, right? Like to serve a role or to function in a way that adds something to the whole that otherwise wouldn't be there. And so I like to talk about artists as the creative pastors in our midst. Pastors are there to equip the body, the rest of the body, to do the work of ministry. So artists, true artists, are the creative pastors in our midst to help the rest of us learn how to fully realize or live into our human creativity. Does that make sense? And so I think that artists sometimes get a little bit skittish when we say that everybody's creative, because does that mean that we're just lumping it all together and we're not making a distinction between actually really good art and what I do on the weekend, you know? And I think artists, if we talk more and more about creativity, they're on the top of that pyramid, so it just actually elevates all the more what they're able to do in a unique way, right? And so I think if we talk about it that way, and then we can even begin to get into conversations about how should we think about or judge different acts of creativity, because not all of them are the same. Not all of them are as good, and we all know that, right? So maybe that's helpful.
Yeah. Henry, would you tell us about, oh, I saw a question. We're going to go with it. How do I shift my mindset from one that celebrates productivity versus creativity? A day spent on creating risks being an unproductive day. Would you talk about that?
Sure. So one of my creative heroes is Pablo Picasso. And the reason that he's my hero is that in his lifetime, he created over 150,000 drawings, paintings. And so I know some people that really struggle to do even one in a year. And so I think there is actually a pretty strong relationship between creativity and productivity. It really depends on how you approach it. So oftentimes we are, and I myself am this, I'm a creative perfectionist. And so I think that my creativity is accomplished when I have this vision that I have and I've perfectly realized it, versus I've started something or even I finished something small. So those don't have to be pitted against each other, but I think generally speaking, creativity is more about, as we heard before, that it's a little bit more divergent. So the question is, how many different ideas can I explore versus how much can I actually accomplish?
Would you mind, just for definition's sake, kind of helping us differentiate between creativity and innovation?
Yeah, innovation would be applied creativity that works, that leads to iterative change, that kind of takes and moves things forward. So, that last question, I think one of the things that's interesting about it is that old adage, don't work harder, work smarter. Creativity and imagination actually is stepping out so that we can reflect on what we're doing, or how we're doing it, or why we're doing it, so that when we re-engage, we can actually work better. There's an old story of the Ford factory where they brought in somebody to try and help move them toward efficiency. And when they did their whole reports and came back, they said, hey, the first thing we got to do is get rid of this one guy, because he sits in an empty office all day and does nothing. Like, we got to get rid of that guy. And Ford came along and says, yeah, that guy sits around thinking, and last year he saved us millions of dollars because he came up with this, that, and the other. You don't touch him, you know. So it kind of illustrates this idea that productivity is, if I stop working, nothing's going to happen. Stepping outside of that is, if I don't dream up the right idea, the wrong things will continue to happen. Or the thing that God might be wanting to lead me into, the Holy Spirit might be trying to guide me into, I won't understand or see or kind of understand. So I think that a big part of that is going, as we lean into imagination, we can begin to innovate either in our family, how we go about building culture, or in our workplace, how we're structuring teams, meetings, and the like to achieve a whole different level of results.
Henry, why don't you take this one? How can someone grow in creativity? What are exercises to build those up?
Sure. There's a lot of different creative exercises. I'd actually like to do one really quick one. So I want you to imagine a combination between mustaches, gourmet coffee, and bicycles. Mm-hmm. And so, did someone say hipster?
Portland.
Portland. There's a couple different types of creativity. We talked about divergent creativity, but there's also convergent creativity, where you bring together multiple things to get to one thing. So one way is to take lots of different elements and see how they can be combined. What do they constructively interfere to create? Besides that, there are lots of different creative exercises within specific crafts. So for example, if you want to be more creative, you could look at a writing prompt, and it'll give you some ideas, a starting point to create. If you want to be creative, you can look into to music and some songwriting structures, and then use that as a basis to establish lyrics. So everywhere you look that there is creative output, you can find something in that domain that will help you to grow in your creativity.
If I can add to that, one is, I've probably mentioned a few of them from up here before, but one of them I probably haven't, which drives my coworkers crazy sometimes, but is the brain hurricane. And so instead of the brainstorm, we take it up a notch, the brain hurricane. And the brain hurricane is this, when you have a problem, you're not necessarily trying to think about what idea is the most plausible answer to this problem. But actually with the brain hurricane, what we do is we say, what is the most ridiculous, crazy thing that you can think of to answer that problem? And there, no, the laws of physics, you know, laws themselves, they don't exist. So if we're trying to think of like, how do we serve the homeless people who are living in Daly Park? We might come up with an answer that says in this exercise that we train all of the feral cats to go purchase food and to cook it up and barbecue it or something like that. And then what we do in the brain hurricane exercise is then everyone in around the table has to give two reasons why that would actually work and why that could be a good idea. But what it does is I think with every problem that we face, we have these plausibility structures, these boundaries where we've seen this problem addressed before, and we tend to approach it in the way that it's been addressed before. And what an exercise like that does is it kind of takes the boundaries off a little bit and helps you to think about it and look at it in a new way. So that's a brain hurricane. And so this would be something for not just for like problems at work, but you know, home, neighborhood, those sorts of things.
So I liked something you mentioned, Henry. You used the phrase constructive interference of different things coming together. And I know you mentioned quite a few different categories of creative expression for you. And I was wondering if you could maybe tell us some ways that those seemingly different endeavors have seemed to cross paths or enhance one or the other.
Sure. So one way that I've seen that's really interesting is the way that creativity is expressed over time. What I mean by that is that when I started to look in and learn more about writing, I realized that writing was really almost exactly the same as creating music. So in music, if you're writing a song, you have this pattern of creating, well, let me take a step back. You have 3 minutes and you're trying to keep someone's attention. So the question is, how can you be compellingly engaging in that time? And so something that they do in music is that you have these patterns of tension and then release, and tension and release. And that goes on and on until you get to the final part of the song. And storytelling is exactly the same way. You establish a scene and you have this tension and conflict, and then you resolve the conflict. And this goes on episodically and then fractally, to the point where you get to the end of the book and you've read 300 pages and it feels like you're engaged the whole time. So I think there's a lot of similarities between creative pursuits, and that's just one.
And a mix of that and what Jim was talking with the brain hurricane, how does community play into this whole creative thing? And is community an asset toward it, or is creativity, should that be more of an individual pursuit?
I think with communities, we're trying to create cultures often, right? So in a family, you're trying to create a culture. In a marriage, you're trying to create a culture. In a church, you're trying to create a culture. In this city, some people, if they're thinking that big, are trying to create a culture. And I think the creative process there just simply begins by having the conversations. If we don't have the conversations, then we go either into routine or we go into a formula, basically. So if curiosity is tied to creativity and faith, I think, is tied to creativity, the idea that things are possible, that I can do, I can create, God will work, God will show up, that if creativity is tied to faith, the opposite of that, it would, another way of saying copy, which was kind of the create versus copy, is saying that we end up going by formula, you know. So how did that book tell me to parent my kids, you know? Mm-hmm. How did I get parented when I was a kid, and I'm just going to kind of go into that same mode of parenting? So a lot of creativity, I think, comes just simply by having the conversation, like, how would we do this different? Like, what do we want to hang on to from how we were raised, and what do we want to absolutely get rid of? And when we get rid of that, what do we put in its place? Like, what can we think of? And just that creative process, that verbal processing between husband and wife or a team or a church, I think begins to bring a lot of ideas, fresh ideas, into how we can pattern ourselves or function more creatively or holistically for the greater health of kind of everyone involved. So in some ways, it's just a matter of the discipline of having the conversation that leads to creativity.
So I would imagine for a lot of us, we're trying to picture this in our own jobs and our own lives and creative ways to make those things better. But a lot of us are faced with certain hierarchy structures within that, certain cultures, like you mentioned, where it's done this way because it's been done this way. What would you suggest for people trying to work out this balance of maybe they do come up with a creative way to change things, but how to go about that when the structures around them seem to prohibit it?
This guy won jazz and swing competitions. I mean, that's breaking out of the box like nothing else, so I think he should take it.
This question might be a little bit outside of my scope, but I'll try to address it. One of the wonderful things we have now is technology and the internet, and there's really no limitation to your ability to produce your ideas, share your ideas, collaborate on your ideas. So many things have started just from someone creating something, putting it out there, and seeing the response that they got. So if you find yourself in a situation where you are limited by rules, by culture, by structures that prevent you from being creative within that domain, there's nothing that says that you can't go outside of that and share that with people. So there's ways to build that in to culture. So Google has their 20% time where they allow their employees to work on any project that they'd like and produce something from that. I believe the founder of Linux and GitHub, those started as collaborative projects where they wanted to find a new way to code, find a new way to share programming, and that didn't happen at work. So I think sometimes instead of going from the inside out, you can go from the outside in, start it somewhere else, and then bring it in once it gets enough traction.
And if I could chime in on that to a degree, one of the things that I found is those constrictions and limits can actually be a gift. Just to share a little bit about my deal is before I was married, I probably started something new that was substantial, like substantial life change, every 4 to 6 months, and nothing ever lasted because I was gone before it had any momentum. Now, I still, if I'm gonna fail in some way, that's the way I'm failing. But it wasn't until I got married and really had to think about how this affects my wife and my responsibilities in the world that actually some of those things began to have traction and longevity. And because it actually forced me to say, there are consequences here, so risk-taking is good and right. But it's really not risk-taking when you're just blindly doing whatever you want to do. But it forced me to really think about it. And then the other thing that happened was when my daughter was diagnosed with autism. And it limits a lot of the things that I can and should do in life. But then it often brings into focus new opportunities and new problems and new ways to think out of the box. There's no tutor in the world in creativity like a 7-year-old little girl on the autism spectrum at 3 a.m. who will not go to sleep. You will think of some wild ideas about how to get her to sleep and to solve all kinds of other problems in the world. So a few things that I've learned through this struggle is, one is I have a list of ideas. I work on ideas every Friday morning, and I have a process so that I don't drive my wife crazy, because I think I just about put her in the hospital with so many crazy ideas when we first got married. So my idea process is that I write it down on a 1-page document. I have 13 predetermined questions that I pray through and ask to this idea. And then I talk to one of the most pessimistic friends that I can imagine. And then if it's all go and I sense that God is still giving me the green light on it, then I go talk to a really optimistic friend to get amped up, and then I talk to my wife. And so that is literally my process with any new idea that we have going on. And some of the ideas that you have, you got to think about them in kind of the way that you think about children. Like when you have them, sometimes just as a child doesn't immediately, as soon as they're born, you just send them out into the world to go live on their own. Sometimes you got to keep them at home a little bit, not talk about them, not have them go out and get a job, but raise them, cultivate them, and wait. So the question isn't always should I or shouldn't I, but when and how. And there are certain things that are coming into fruition now that I thought of 7 years ago and have returned back to over time. So those are just some ways to think about the gift of limitations. Yeah. All right. One more question. What's the relationship between creativity and discipline? If you could both say a few comments on that. And I think some of what's behind this is just the idea that these tend to be juxtaposed to each other, that you tend to think of when someone's being creative, they're not really being focused and disciplined. When someone's being focused and disciplined, they're not being creative. But it seems like that's not really the relationship. So would you guys talk about that?
Yeah, sure, piggybacking on kind of what you're saying, the limits can force creativity. I have a funky stomach, and so I have a friend that's a really good cook. Really great guy, doesn't get ruffled by many things, he's very low drama, but when we go over to his house, I always feel bad because he loves to cook, and I got about 10 ingredients that he can work from, right? And so I start kind of apologizing, like, hey, I'm sorry that you can't just go full tilt Italian, I'm sorry you can't do this or that. And he goes, oh no, I love it. And he goes, I have to be the most creative when you come over, because the limiting of options forces creativity. So he sees this as kind of a creative exercise, if you will. And so it was interesting for me to get a different perspective on how he was viewing it. But I think we get this idea that creativity is idealistic, that it's impractical, that it's untried, untested, that it doesn't get results, that it's an excuse that people can kind of put there instead of staying focused. And I think the kind of creativity we're talking about tonight is something that's deep and it's consistent with consistency. That you can be creative but still do the same task or have the same job kind of throughout time. And so, yeah, I think that the idea is more of a mindset that we're bringing creativity and imagination into our day-to-day life, into our relationships, into how we see our problems so that we can have better attitudes, like kind of on and on. It doesn't mean that every day we're doing a different thing. So.
Yeah, creativity and discipline is a really big topic, but some thoughts I've had from that, from trying lots of different creative things. When I was swing dancing a lot, I would definitely spend a lot of time practicing, but because I enjoyed it so much, then it didn't feel like as much work. It was easy to be disciplined. So I think that's one aspect of it, is how much are you enjoying the creative thing that you're doing? If it's creative and it feels like work, then there might be some difficulties there. I think the second thing is that there is one of the prerequisites for discipline is having some type of system or structure. And so what I mean by that is, if I do a creative exercise, let's say I'm doing an improv game, I'm not just creative without bounds. There's something defined. And so those components are, this is the name of the game. You're trying to, you know, come up with 10 movie ideas. These are the rules of the game. You're going to do it in this way. You have 5 minutes to do it. And so I think that when we see creativity in specific disciplines, there are always those boundaries that help us be more creative. If I'm writing, then let's say I'm even writing an essay, then I know I have so much of a length to create within. If I'm composing a song, well, that song's not just going on forever, and I know the lyrics have to work together a certain way, and I know that chords progress in a certain way. And so the more you can define what your boundaries of creativity are, the more you can create within those bounds.
All right. Well, we're going to close up, and we're going to close up by giving you kind of the little surprise we were telling you about. So before that, I just want to frame this a bit. The reason, in part, why we're emphasizing this is because the lack of taking creativity and imagination seriously comes primarily from this cultural idol that we have, sort of the Enlightenment rationality. So even when we hear Jesus's command to love God with your mind, what we tend to think of is the more rational aspects of our mind, to break down arguments, to parse out the Bible, to think about clearly what's some linear way of understanding something, what's the right principle, that sort of thing. But I think that it's really calling us to love God with our whole mind. And then the second command Jesus gives is to love your neighbor as yourself, which I think is actually one of the most substantial calls to creativity that you can ever imagine. We tend to think of that verse in this very truncated way, where we think Jesus is just saying, go do nice things to nice people. But really what he's saying is, you've become a master at loving somebody. You have accumulated all of these things for loving someone, namely yourself. You get a degree, you buy a house, you have a bicycle, you go on vacation. You have mastered the art of loving, namely one person. But now you have all of these resources with which to love, and you're practiced in serving somebody with them. Now, what does it look like to take those very things and creatively leveraging them for the sake of your neighbor? What would it look like to help provide a vacation for somebody? How could you use your skills with an Excel spreadsheet to bless somebody? So this call to love our neighbor is a call to creative love. And so here's where we're going with this. Next month is our last first Wednesday until the fall. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a completely different format. And instead of having speakers and those sorts of things, we're going to come in here and we're going to basically do a workshop for whatever creative ideas you have to love your neighbor. And so the kind of the catch to this is, the money that we would spend on paying a speaker, we're actually going to break that up. We're going to take $500, we're going to break it up into $100 a piece, and we're going to say, whoever has the 5 best ideas for loving their neighbor, we are going to fund that thing that you're doing. So for the next month, I want you to just be dreaming up how you can take a simple $100 and just completely out of the box love somebody and bless somebody. And then what we'll do is we'll have some people in this room, we'll help with some exercises, and if you don't have an idea, that's fine. Please come here that night. It'll be very important for you to give feedback to other people and to vote on which ideas we're going to fund. And then we're going to invite you to help decide which ones we're going to go for. So basically next month, it's the, what are we calling it? We're calling it like the $100 workshop or something like that for First Wednesday. So show up here and let's just think of crazy ways that we could take this simple bread and fish and see if Jesus can multiply it in some way to bless our neighbors. So let me pray and we'll wrap up the night. Father, we just pray over the next month that you would help us to really think about our neighbors, these people that you've brought into our life, our coworkers, the people across town that we may ignore, our physical, actual neighbors, those who are in our community who are the most vulnerable, that you would help us to fix our concern on them and our love on you and on them, and that you would just stoke ideas and show us how we can use the simple stuff of our lives to love them well, to wash their feet, to tangibly serve them. So, God, you are the one who spoke everything into creation, and you made it very good, and you called us to get our hands dirty and to take the good gifts of this earth and to cultivate them into something very good. So we pray that you would do that with us over the next week in the name of Jesus. Amen. Good night, everyone. And by the way, if we've got books in the back, so you might need those for your dreaming.